today. I think I have like 4 or 5 old like symphony orchestra pieces for you, which is kind of interesting because most of the topics for these films are anything but calm. But let's just stop talking and dive right into our first film, Omega Man. Now, you might recognize the story for Omega Man better as I Am Legend, the movie with Will Smith, or the 50s sci-fi book it was based on, but this is the 1971 film that gets, like, a lot weirder with it than the Will Smith movie does. If you know that one, you're probably thinking, like, Apocalypse, but instead of zombies, it's vampires. Omega Man is more like, instead of zombies and vampires, it's homicidal mutant cultists who blame science for what happened to them and go full medieval weaponry on this lone surviving scientist. It has this interracial relationship as its love story, and it's often cited as among the first interracial kisses in a film. The first half of the movie is actually exactly what you want, with like all this weird, nonsensical sci-fi and a compelling enough story, but the end is kind of atrocious, convoluted, rushed, and it does a massive disservice to its female lead, which is probably not the first time I will say that today about a sci-fi film from the 70s, but still. The beginning of the film is almost good enough to make up for it, so I do highly recommend it. Just if you want that weird, again, mutant, cultist, weird, psychotic vibe. That's what this is.
Thank you.
very pleasant orchestral music version of the Sleeping Beauty song was from a very not pleasant film. It's called Rollerball, and this is like the time for stupid action to inherit the earth. This was remade in 2002, but I think there's a difference between a bad 70s sci-fi and a bad 2000s sci-fi. Like, I'm not gonna suspend my disbelief enough to enjoy the stupid camp of it if it was made 20 years ago. And I say this with love because I do love this exact kind of movie. It can't be that bad because Norman Jewison directed it. It's this dystopian future where instead of countries, there are only massive corporations controlling people. And the sport of rollerball, which is kind of like a mix between speed cycling and roller derby and football, is the international sport to keep the masses happy. And because of these crazy sports scenes, this was actually one of the first films to feature stunt performers in the credits, which I think is kind of cool. You know, we always talk about how they're very underappreciated. The games were filmed at an Olympic arena in Munich, and the citizens there were invited to attend the filmings as extras for the games. And the whole film is meant to be like this giant anti-corporation, anti-violence critique. But then the citizens actually loved watching the tapings so much that there were genuine talks about forming real-life rollerball leagues based on the film. And that, like, freaked Norman Jewison out. He's like, you guys completely missed the purpose of this movie.
Thank you.
keeping in line with, like, the super awful, uber violent sports of the future, we are moving on to Death Race 2000. This is probably my favorite stupid one on the list today. It's definitely the one I think about the most in my spare time, and that 100% says some things about me. But Death Race 2000 stars Sylvester Stallone and David Carradine. The tagline tells you basically everything you need to know about the film. This is, quote, "In the year 2000, hit-and-run driving is no longer a felony. It's the national sport." Like, it totally makes fun of, like, the joke you always have when you're driving with someone that's, like, 10 points if you hit that person, but then it, like, takes it up to 11. It's like people are putting, you know, elderly patients in medical beds in the road to score more points. Like, these, it has these giant custom-built cars that look like monster trucks, and they didn't actually run on set because they were, like, so clunky and useless, so they had to roll them down hills and then speed up the footage to make them look faster than they were. This next song I'm going to play for you that's from that movie isn't actually from that movie, but I chose it because it has this, like, big chunk of dialogue in the opening of the song that is from the movie, and I thought it was, like, a really good stupid, like, super testosterone-based example of what this fantastic, wonderful movie that, like, I have a poster of in my wall is all about.
Please, don't you ever take off that mask.
No. Don't you know about my face?
I've heard stories. Nobody's ever seen it, have they?
Except my other navigators.
And they're all dead.
So they are.
Thank you.
90% sure that that was the France national anthem, and I did not realize that when I picked the song, but this version is featured in the movie Stalker, so I think it still counts. This is probably the most cinematic film on the list today, and that's kind of saying something. It's sort of this, like, maybe David Lynchian Russian story that follows a writer, a professor, and a guide into this military restricted zone that has some kind of like supernatural, spiritual relationship powers. It's based on a book that was inspired by a nuclear accident from 1957 that left this massive space in Europe abandoned in the fallout, but there was no official mention or account of it. A statistic I found on the film was that it contains 142 shots in 163 minutes, with an average shot length of over 1 minute, and most of them lasting for more than 4 minutes. It's this beautiful, slow, theoretical piece that is very cerebral, and this is one that you're going to have to like fight not to look at your phone at, but it's really enriching and worth it if you manage to. But I already told you that this would be a dumb show, so we're gonna move on to something that is maybe just as cerebral, but not quite as smart. It is Phantasm. This is a film with a weird cult status just because of how inane and insane it is. I want to read you the synopsis on IMDb for a second. This is like the official one. Mike, a young teenage boy who just lost his parents, afraid to lose his brother, follows him to a funeral, where Mike witnesses the tall man lifting a coffin on his own. Mike decides to investigate and discovers that the tall man, protected by his flying spheres, is shrinking dead bodies down to half their normal size and reanimating them as slaves. It is then up to Mike, his brother, and Reggie the ice cream man to stop the tall man. Now let me tell you, I did not leave a single word out. That is all the context you get for this film. It's a super cult classic, low-budget, nonsense sci-fi, so much so that the director rented out all of the equipment on Fridays and would return them on Monday morning, so he'd only have to pay for 1 day of rental on the equipment. And then he, like, shot the film 3 days at a time. It does have that cult status, though, like I said, and a lot of people do appreciate it, despite its stupidity. J.J. Abrams named Captain Phasma in, like, the new Star Wars movies after this film, because he thought that, like, her chrome, silvery helmet they designed for her looks like the floating balls in Phantasm. I also found 3 different reports of how the idea for this movie supposedly came to the director. This includes the director saying he had a dream about it. This includes him saying that it was a spin on Something Wicked This Way Comes and they lost production rights to that movie. I don't know about that one. And I have heard him say that he loved the special effects and practical effects and then decided to build a story around them. So there are a lot of contradicting efforts. I have a sense that probably some weird mix of them is all true, but just to give you a vibe of how, like, disorganized this film is in the very best way possible.
1, 2, 3. just sitting here at midnight. And I've been sitting here till noon. You see, my baby left me lonely. Yes, she did. My baby left me blue. And I'm just so sad and lonely since I lost my love. Blue, I could feel for a lifetime. And I wonder who is holding you, baby. Who's holding you at midnight? Just sitting here at midnight, drowning myself in wine. And while I'm searching for a reason, 100 come to my mind. And I'm just so sad alone since I lost my love. Blue, I could feel for a lifetime. And I wonder who is holding you, baby, at midnight.
Thank you.
is from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I do mean the 1978 version, arguably one of the best. I've seen it cited as one of the best extraterrestrial invasion movies, and I do have to agree, it's a really good one. It is probably one of the better known ones on the list in that regard. It stars Donald Sutherland and Jeff Goldblum and Leonard Nimoy. I always love Spock being there. It has that like super iconic, famous, often parodied shot of someone yelling into the camera and pointing while like the person they're pointing at is screaming and shaking their head. My favorite fact about this film is that, like, we all know how Jeff Goldblum talks. He has, like, that very specific way of pronouncing his words and different rhythms in it. But this film is really early in his career, and he's actually cited this as the role that caused him to, you know, perform with that kind of put-on accent. He originally misread a line and paused between words to find his sentence again, but when he tried to read it properly, the director said he liked that way better, and then it stuck for the character, and then when Jeff Goldblum went on to do more auditions, people were expecting that kind of performance from him, and now he's built his whole career on it. Another classic in this genre, though, is Dawn of the Dead. All of the zombie movies with names like these tend to kind of blur together in my mind, but this one has a few really distinctive moments to me that always make it stand out. You know, the helicopter scenes, everything they do in the mall, the news anchor opening. I can always differentiate this one from the others where I might not be able to differentiate, you know, the others from the others. Reportedly, the extras in this movie who, you know, played zombies were paid with $1, one donut, and one Dawn of the Dead t-shirt. I don't know if that's true, but I kind of like the lore of it. George A. Romero, who obviously directed this movie, has a really big stake in the zombie game. He had to fight adamantly against the X rating for this film, as they were going to give it unless he made cuts. He thought that the rating had this giant stigma with pornography, which, you know, it does, and he was able to convince distributors to release it with no rating. But because, you know, they had no rating in a time when ratings were really important, all of the trailers had to have this giant disclaimer in the front that said along the lines, "While there's no sex in this film, there is enough violence that no one under 17 will be admitted to theaters." And I don't know if anyone else has, like, really big nerd parents, but my dad would always hum this song to me, like, walking to kindergarten or something, and now it's always in my mind as, like, the song my dad would hum. And it's gonna be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. I can almost guarantee you that. It's super catchy, so enjoy.
Thank you.
even sorry that you're going to be thinking about that for the rest of the day, because I am too, so we can suffer together. Now, the last movie we're going to talk about today is A Clockwork Orange. This is probably the most famous one on the list. It's a natural classic, Stanley Kubrick's weird, depraved sci-fi dystopian. There's a lot to love about it, and there is quite a bit to hate love about it. Ultraviolence, milk drinking, brainwashing Mozart. This film has a lot, like I said. And really, I think it's popular enough that I don't have to say a ton about it. And if you're curious, I really don't know a way that I could describe this movie in a way that's appropriate for Canadian airwaves. So search at your own risk. Otherwise, enjoy the Ultraviolence, enjoy the old Ludwig van, which I will be playing for you soon, and enjoy, if you don't know anything about it, not knowing anything about this film. Next week, we are going to keep on going with those same, like, grungy vibes that this week had, with what I'm going to call production purgatory. These are all going to be movies that nearly never made it to screens because of massive, terrible behind-the-scenes budget producer issues. I would like to take a really quick moment to plug the McMaster 35 mil club. I'll admit I am part of the leadership, so I am a little bit biased, but we do a ton of really cool movie-related events and screenings on McMaster campus. We're doing movie trivia this week on Thursday, October 3rd in club space at the McMaster Union Student Center at 5, so come play, meet some movie people, win some movie prizes. You can always keep up to date on our events at the Instagram, which is McMaster35mil. I will say that is MacMaster35mil. I really hope to see you there. It's an awesome time. Until then, though, I have been your host, Scarlett Sapir, right here on 93.3 CFMU-FM. Thank you so much for listening to CinemaScope. Next week is going to be Production Purgatory. This week was terrible 70s sci-fi. And this, right now, is A Clockwork Orange. Thank you.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Dancing in the rain, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm happy again. I'm singing and dancing in the rain.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Classical Today. I'm your host, Richard Kohar, your guide to great classical music for the next 2 hours. It's the last day of February, and this means that the record labels are releasing their newest offerings for March. We have a lot of exciting new releases to listen to today, as well as some great classic recordings. First up, two new CDs that were released yesterday by Atma Classique. The first CD is from Forestier, the 12-member ensemble of young classical guitarists who bursted onto the Montreal music scene in 2002. The album Aruko is the fruit of a richly inspiring cultural and musical exchange in 2008 between the members of Forestier and the Chilean guitar ensemble. The title work Aruko by award-winning Chilean composer Javier Ferraz is inspired by a Chilean epic poem. This is the first four movements of Aruko performed by the guitar ensemble Forestier.